Karen Hartglass. You are listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much. Really, thank you so very much for being there, listening, and caring about our planet and the food that we eat and the people who eat that food. Gary DiMattei is joining me today, co-host of It's All About Food. I'm looking at you. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Karen. What happened? You couldn't get a guest, so now I'm back on?
You're my favorite guest.
I'm kidding.
Yes, you're kidding. The thing is, sometimes we have a lot of things that we just want to talk about.
Yeah, no, this is great.
I always try and put a positive spin on the world, even though I mention the dark side often enough. And we might talk about the dark side and the light a little bit, because Gary and I are in the middle of seeing all of the 9 Star Wars movies, the 3 trilogies, and we're watching them in order right now. And
yeah, we are. Why?
Why? Because we're sheltering in place, and because we joined Disney Plus for the month to watch Hamilton.
Yeah, I think we might keep Disney Plus around, because even though they're a big, giant, evil corporation, while sheltering in place, it's kind of fun to go back and watch some of these classics.
Yeah, I wasn't planning on talking about Star Wars. It just came out. But there are so many metaphors. So many things are symbolic in the stories, especially with what's going on today. You can relate to it for any time, I think, in human history. But I'm understanding it differently than when I first saw each of these movies.
Well, it's rooted in the philosophy of Joseph Campbell. Many people have read Joseph Campbell, and if you haven't, it's a fun read, especially while sheltering in place in a pandemic. But the irony is that, and George Lucas says this himself in a documentary that was done about 10 years ago, or maybe a little more now, which you could also see on Disney Plus. Now, mind you, this is not a plug for Disney Plus.
No, we don't plug.
We don't want to give Disney any more money. But in the documentary, Lucas talks about how the last thing in the world he wanted to do was become a huge corporation. He wanted to remain independent. He wanted to call his own shots. He wanted to write his own stories. He didn't want someone telling him, you have to change this, you have to change that. So he was really a rogue studio type that
ended up joining the Empire.
Ended up joining the Empire eventually. But during the process of getting there, he left all of the studio systems and created his own studio, Lucasfilms, out in Marin County. It's a fascinating documentary, but Joseph Campbell, he is also fascinating, and you should read about Campbell if you like the concepts that are in Star Wars, like the Force, the dark side, and going to the light, etc., etc.
It helped me understand a little bit better how innocent children who love and care through a series of perhaps traumatic events can be full of fear, full of anger. Their hate can grow, and they join the dark side. It's symbolic.
Right. Hating is feeding your dark side, hate. And that's why when Palpatine starts laughing, because the hate that he sees growing in Luke and wants him to give in to that hate. You can relate. A lot of us just get consumed with darkness, and we just go deeper and deeper and deeper into the darkness, and then before we know it, there's no way out.
Right. Well, unlike Star Trek, which is vegetarian, the people eat vegetarian, and maybe even vegan. Star Wars, they're all omnivores in this story, so
yeah,
we don't have a food lesson from them. But there's a lot of other great lessons.
Although when Natalie Portman in the earlier, the 1, 2, and 3, she's sitting down with Hayden Christensen, who plays
Anakin Skywalker.
They are eating a vegan meal, and I think Natalie was vegan at the time,
maybe,
or dabbling with veganism. So she may have had that in her contract.
Sure.
So there's a good note to end the Star Wars discussion that we weren't going to have. But the reason we did it was to see Hamilton, and Hamilton is great, and everyone should see Hamilton. I love what they did by making it available to people for the $6 and some change
that $6.99 for 1 month of Disney Plus.
For 1 month, you could see it where it would normally cost you $400 for a really terrible ticket in the balcony somewhere. But now there are no tickets in any balconies anywhere, and that's why we're here. One of the reasons we're here is to make you feel better about the fact that the theaters are closed, because we're going to give you a little bit of theater on the air.
Okay, I want to talk about bananas.
Bananas!
We love bananas here. We eat bananas almost every day, full of gratitude for bananas.
Yes,
which come from far away.
Far away, yes.
The thing about bananas, I learned a while ago that the skins are valuable, but we don't eat the skins.
We throw the skins away.
We throw the skins away. Now, some good people may compost the skins. Other people, before composting the skins, may make a banana tea, which has two valuable purposes.
What are they, Karen?
One is, bananas have melatonin in them.
And what does melatonin do, Karen?
Melatonin is something that we produce naturally. And if our bodies are working well and our stress levels are good and we're healthy and we're getting enough light at the right times of day, we produce melatonin in certain amounts so that at the end of the day it makes us sleepy and we fall asleep. Yeah, so we want to have a good amount of melatonin in the evenings, turn off the televisions and the phones and lower that blue light emitting from all of these pieces of equipment, and then we can have a nice sleep. If some people have a problem, they might not produce enough melatonin, whatever it is. Eating a banana with melatonin may help. And the banana peels contain potassium and magnesium, which are both natural muscle relaxants. Banana peels also have the amino acid L-tryptophan, which gets converted to serotonin and melatonin. Having a banana tea is helpful at night to sleep.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
But you should probably get organic bananas, because
always
bananas that aren't organic are sprayed with a lot of really bad
stuff. Yeah, not just the toxic chemicals they put in the ground to grow, but also the bananas in shipping are coated with some nasty stuff that you don't want to consume. So you want organic bananas, you can make a tea with them, and you can also water your plants with this tea. Banana tea is very useful, but there's more. So there are some creative companies out there doing some very interesting things with bananas. For example, there is a Hungarian startup called PlantCraft. You can read about them and see their products at plantcraft.com. And they are making plant-based deli meats using bananas and discarded grapes from winemaking.
Wow.
And what's great about this is these are two real products that have great value. They have nutrients in them, valuable nutrients that we just throw away. So discarded grapes from winemaking, they've got the grape seeds.
Which is resveratrol.
There's probably resveratrol left over in the leftover skins that
aren't
used.
Which is good for you.
Very good for you. They're high in fatty acids and vitamin C. So there's a lot of value to using these particular products. And when you use them, you don't have to use synthetic products and crazy cultured lab meat stuff that they're creating in the lab.
Right.
So this is exciting.
It's very exciting. What's the name of that company again?
They're called PlantCraft, and unfortunately, they were planning on launching in the United States before COVID-19, but the borders are closed.
Right. So where are they launching now?
They can't travel here, but they're shifting to focus on the European Union.
European Union. Well, we must have some listeners in the European Union, so check it out.
Look for plant-based deli meats by PlantCraft. You know the company Dole.
Yeah, like Dole Pineapple,
like
right?
Like Dole Bananas.
Right.
They have a plan to eliminate food waste by 2025. And they plan on using banana leaf packaging and pineapple powder.
Banana leaf packaging and pineapple powder.
And that's very exciting because Dole is a huge company and they generate huge amounts of waste from parts of the fruit that they don't use. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the Dole company because I learned a little bit about the man behind Dole who really brought them to the place they are today.
Right.
David H. Murdoch. That's Murdoch with a K at the end. Not to be confused with David Murdoch with an H at the end. And David H. Murdoch, in 1985, he took over the nearly bankrupt Hawaiian firm Castle & Cook, which owned pineapple and banana producer Dole Food Company. And then in the end, he turned Dole into the largest, the world's largest producer of fruits and vegetables. Now, I'm not promoting Dole products, but one of the great things that David H. Murdoch did with Dole, and I think it came out of the fact that his first wife died of ovarian cancer, and this was his great love, and he was profoundly upset by it in some of the stories that I've read about him. He ended up creating within Dole a team of PhD scientists to study fruits and vegetables. And I'm sure this is one of the things that came out of it. And he himself is not vegan, but he's near vegan. He's 97 years old, and he figured out a routine and a diet that would be the healthiest for him. And at 97, I don't think he's doing too badly. That's my banana story, Gary.
Wow. David H. Murdoch, not to be confused with David Murdoch. So David H. has the H in the middle, and David Murdoch has the H on the end.
Brilliant, Gary.
Right?
Right.
So that's how we tell them apart, yes. Other than the fact that he's 97, David H. is 97, and David Murdoch, the other guy, I don't know how old he is.
I don't know how old
12?
He is.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, that was great. I have a story coming out of the UK.
Okay.
You've interviewed these two guys. They're fantastic. I met them after your interview. Henry Firth and Ian Thiesby, the guys behind Bosch.
I love those boys.
Yes. This is great for them because they're such great guys. Bosch is officially in the top 50 UK cookbooks of all time after selling 300,000 copies of their cookbook, Simple Recipes, Amazing Food, All Plants, Bosch, by Henry Firth and Ian Thiesby. Bosch's first cookbook has sold 300,000 copies.
Wow.
And officially entered the top best-selling 50 UK cookbooks of all time. Karen, Responsible Eating and Living's It's All About Food may have had something to do with that because you had a few great interviews with, or two great interviews with the Bosch boys.
I was lucky to meet them in person. They were in New York. They came into
right.
the PRN studio, and we had a great interview. It was really fun. Those guys are really fun. That was 2 years ago.
Now, as a curator of cookbooks, Karen, you have read hundreds of cookbooks. This is really a beautiful book, isn't it?
It is. Well, you were the one, I think, who pointed them out to me in
yes.
the beginning because they were one of the originators of doing those overhead 1 minute
right.
films of
right.
how to make things.
Yeah, their films are phenomenal.
And they were stunning.
They are those 60-second films that you see someone creating this incredible dish, overhead shots, all. Of course, it never looks like that when you're doing it in your kitchen. But this is some serious videography work, and there's a lot of little documentaries on YouTube as well about how they shoot those overhead shots. Anyway, check out this book. Karen will post her interview with the Bosch boys, but congratulations to Ian
and
Henry. We love you guys. Keep going. I know you've got another book coming out. Congratulations to
Woo!
The Bosch boys.
Congratulations.
Woo! All right, you're
up. Bish, bash, bosh.
Bish, bash, bosh.
Okay. Here's another story.
Let's go.
Okay.
I'm ready.
All good news. Good news that always comes with...
the dark side.
The dark side.
But, you know, that's why we opened with the Star Wars discussion. Because everything can go to the dark side. For example, Lucas wanted to be a Jedi and go out on his own and do good in the world. And he then went to the dark side. And now we're talking about... the irony there. His idea was not to go to any big studio. He wanted to call his own shots. He didn't want anybody telling him how to make his movies, how to be a storyteller.
Yes.
And now he's like sold out to one of the biggest storytellers
yeah.
who tell
it's
people what to do.
It's difficult though. That's the lure of fame and fortune.
Right.
Especially when you're passionate about your work and you want everyone to
see
it.
My point was, don't feel bad about having to add a little bit of the dark side, because it'll tell folks what not to go to if
sure.
they become very popular.
Popular. Chocolate company Lindt announces new vegan range in Germany. Now, Lindt is a very popular chocolate bar. You can see it in all of the crummy drugstores.
Right.
You can get it everywhere. And it's like one of the better chocolates you can get in a drugstore. Lindt has never really been very vegan friendly, although their dark chocolate, I believe, didn't have any animal ingredients in it. But they are now focusing on a vegan chocolate. It's the Hello range, and it will be using oat milk and have three flavors, cookie, hazelnut, and salted caramel. And it's supposed to appeal to everybody, not just vegans, flexitarians, lactose intolerant people, and milk allergy sufferers. You may remember there was an expose the FDA did that showed that even chocolate bars that don't contain milk as an ingredient can have a significant amount of milk in it that people with milk allergies are susceptible to because of the equipment that's being used.
You did a great report on chocolate at Responsible Eating and Living called The Chocolate Report, and we'll put a link to that. It's an excellent report. I should know. I filmed it.
And you helped.
Yes.
Okay, so the thing about the Lindt chocolate, it's great that they're coming out with some vegan flavors using oat milk. The dark side of the story is Lindt is not listed on the Food Empowerment Chocolate List as a company they recommend. They only list Ghirardelli, which is owned by Lindt, and they list them in the cannot recommend category, companies that did not respond. So while Lindt is learning to make chocolate vegan, I hope they are also getting knowledgeable about how to source their chocolate from cruelty-free sources that don't use children as slaves to harvest the cocoa beans.
Very good. Yeah, that's also in your report, and it's excellent. So Lindt is spelled not L-I-N-T, but it has like a D-T in it, right?
Yes, L-I-N-D-T.
Right. So
I'm not sure what the D is doing in there, but that's another language.
Well, it's now going dairy-free, so maybe the D is going to...
And can we continue talking about dairy?
Yes.
While we're on the
dark side. Even though I don't like dairy, but we are talking about the dark side, so let's talk about dairy.
Well, we're talking about the light and the dark.
Right.
And how we...
Like chocolate.
Oh, light and dark chocolate.
Or light and dark beer.
Now, here you go. Here's a positive spin. I prefer dark chocolate.
Yes.
Because it's lighter in ingredients.
Right. But it sounds like there's a lot of folks out there that like milk chocolate, and Lindt, for example, is using oat milk. So
yes.
Their product must be a milk chocolate product or a...
Right. A milk chocolate.
M-E-L-K product. An M-E-L-K product.
Okay. Chocolate. So here's a story with dairy farmers.
Right.
I'm reading a report in Bloomberg.com. The world's dairy farmers are facing an existential crisis.
Okay.
Okay, dairy farmers, I'm sure many of them are good people, good family people. They care about their neighbors and their families and the world, and they don't realize that they are exploiting cows and being cruel to cows. And the bigger problem are the industries that produce dairy, these giant farms with tons of cows hooked up to machines and feeding them with bovine growth hormone.
Boo.
To make them give more milk. That's in the United States. It's not in many other countries. But they are facing an existential crisis, and COVID-19 has definitely brought this out. But they were already suffering because of the increasing demand of plant milks around the world. And they started complaining when they were losing market share. They didn't care about soy milk being around 20 years ago because it wasn't affecting their pocketbook. But now it's got a strong foundation. There's all different kinds of plant milk, something for everyone. And it's hitting them. And now with COVID-19, it's especially hitting them. One of the reasons this article points out is that people aren't going to restaurants, and they tend to consume more buttery, cheesy dishes than when they're at home.
Wow.
So that's also impacting the dairy industry. And what's going to happen, very likely, is the governments that are able to will subsidize these industries to keep them going.
Case in point, I just read that there's a $100 million investment in Canada. This week's news, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announces a $100 million investment in the plant-based protein. So that's what you're talking about here.
Well, that's a good point. There are good ones and not so good ones. Some of the subsidies are going to keep the dairy industries in business. But what we at Responsible Eating and Living think is that that money should do a number of things. Those potential subsidies, those potential incentives should be used to help transition dairy farmers out of the dairy business and into plant-based farming, growing plants, growing fruits and vegetables, growing oats to make oat milk,
right?
Doing something else.
Well, oat milk is really popular, as you know. An example of that is exactly what you said. Dairy farmers can then start growing oats and making oat milk. Oatly is a company that makes oat milk products.
Didn't we talk about a story where they were helping some farmers actually grow oats and transition
right.
away from dairy farming?
Yeah, that is
happening.
They're also launching a new plant-based yogurt range in the UK supermarkets. Oatly is launching a new range of fortified oat-based vegan yogurts in 4 flavors in the UK supermarkets that taste just like dairy yogurt.
Yeah,
that's
we
their
don't
claim.
Need the cows.
Yeah.
We don't. We need the cows to just be living their lives.
Oatly is a Swedish company. It's known for its hugely popular barista milk and eye-catching marketing campaigns.
So here's what we're recommending. When you have a moment, you can write a letter to your representatives in the United States, your senators and congresspeople. You could also write your local representatives. And if you're in a particular area where dairy farming is strong, you can write to your local representatives and suggest to them that dairy farmers should be helped to transition out of dairy farming and into some other kind of business, most likely some plant farming.
Yeah, let's start a letter campaign.
Let's do that.
Let's get that going. All right. Another really great idea that a lot of people should do is encourage your bakeries. Now, I don't encourage people to eat sugar, but there's no getting around it. Encourage a lot of your bakeries to sell vegan products, because a lot of the dairy and eggs and animal products go into these baked goods. They are disguised by baked goods. And a nice little comment to one of your local bakeries, hey, you should check out some vegan baking recipes, some vegan recipes for some of these cakes and cookies that you make. Because I know that a lot of people, you know, there's no getting around it. They're going to be going into the bakeries and they're going to be starting to look for it. A London bakery has ditched animal products entirely. This is my point. They're going vegan after the owner of this bakery was inspired by an Earthling Ed video.
Wow.
So after discovering the cruel truth behind the dairy industry, Fairy Pan Cake Studio in London made the bold decision to become an entirely vegan business overnight. So it can be done, folks.
It can be done. Now, a lot of bakeries that make bread, the bread itself could be vegan until they paint a little egg wash on top to make it shiny.
Right. And you know what I've been using instead of egg wash to make the bread shiny? I've been using aquafaba.
Aquafaba.
Yeah, it's...
We need a song for aquafaba.
Aquafaba, aquafaba. Hey, it's not beans, it's the water from the bean. Aquafaba, aquafaba. Really, really good for human beings.
No, human beings. Gary just made that up.
Right off the top of my
right
head.
Right off the top of his bean
A jingle head. For my jangler.
Yes, aquafaba. We love aquafaba. Oh, that just reminded me. I just modified our Pancake House vegan pancakes
Oh,
recipe,
those are so good.
And I added in the aquafaba to it.
Karen made this amazing recipe of a while back called Vegan Pancake House Pancakes. They taste just like the kind of pancakes you get in the vegan pancake houses across the United States called the International House of Pancakes with the blue roof. Oh, no, is that Howard Johnson's? Anyway, it's one of those pancake houses
yeah.
that have the colorful roofs.
This may not be as fluffy.
Oh, it's pretty darn fluffy.
But it's made with whole foods. It's just a very, very satisfying pancake. And this time when I made it, I used my gluten-free flour mix that I've been talking about.
You have to keep talking about it because there's a lot of people out there who are wheat intolerant or they have celiac disease. They need to know there is life after giving up wheat.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, fortunately, there are plenty of gluten-free flours out in the commercial market. We like Bob's. We've used two of Bob's Red Mill's gluten-free flours. They have garbanzo bean flour. They have tapioca starch, I believe, sorghum flour, rice flour, mix of things. But they're not organic.
No.
We love Bob's Red Mill.
And they're working to make more products organic.
But it's not there yet. And the other thing is I don't like the starches that are mixed in with these flours because it's a more refined food.
Right.
So we've been making gluten-free flour from steel-cut oats or rolled oats and whole millet and garbanzo beans, either the garbanzo beans or garbanzo bean flour.
Which we have found to be organic under the brand name of Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste has the organic garbanzo bean flour for those of you out there who want to find some organic garbanzo bean flour that you don't have to grind yourself with organic garbanzo beans. Go to the Namaste, people.
Namaste. We get it through Vitacost. We're not getting any benefit by naming Vitacost. That's just the one we use most frequently. And it's more expensive, no question about it.
Oh, the organic garbanzo bean flour is definitely more expensive.
But you can taste the difference.
Right.
Anyway, so I mix these up, oats, millet, and garbanzo bean flour. I use a ratio of 1 cup oat flour, 3/4 cup millet flour, and 1/4 cup garbanzo bean flour. And I use it for a lot of things. And I use it in my pancake mix now. And it was amazing with aquafaba.
Yeah.
We're going to have to listen to that, you singing it and write it down.
Well, it wasn't really a great jingle. It was the first pass at a jingle, but I'll work on it because I'm working on the Okara jingle that we keep singing on the show.
Yeah, we have to come up with some nice harmony. But the point is that many people who are eating a lot of organic food are not buying grains or flours that are organic. I know I fell into that hole. And we've discovered the glyphosate residue is big with these conventional flours and with garbanzo beans.
And glyphosate is the stuff in Roundup Ready products that are sprayed onto the plants. And glyphosate is bad news.
Bad news. And speaking of glyphosate, Mexico announced a phase-out and ban on glyphosate herbicides.
Well, that's fantastico for Mexico.
And their plan is to reach a total ban in 4 years by 2024.
They're gradually love Mexico.
Reducing it. Of course, our borders are closing more and more. I think they just closed the border to us.
Right.
Because of COVID-19. But they're doing the right thing. United States isn't. But maybe we'll learn.
I don't know. But Mexico is learning, and so that's a good thing because there's a lot of people in the world, not just Americans. We're now starting to think about the other countries and looking up to them and saying, wow, you guys have it, you know, you're really getting it together. We need to follow suit.
I think some of Mexico's richness is in their heirloom grains and corns.
Yes.
Corns. Rice, a lot of their native foods, and there are so many different varieties. And when people start growing Roundup Ready corn with Roundup Ready that contains glyphosate and monocropping, they're reducing the use of all of those other varieties. That monocrop, that Roundup Ready crop can contaminate all of these wonderful heirloom varieties. So Mexico's realizing this. They want to protect their richness, which is their native foods, and they are also realizing the scientific evidence of the glyphosate toxicity that impacts human health and the environment.
Impacts human health when you are a consumer of products that have been sprayed with this poison, and it impacts the health of the person who is picking the products in the fields. Good for you, Mexico. Thank you for that.
Thanks for bringing that up. Because a lot of times when we talk about eating organic, we focus on how it's healthier for the individual who's consuming the food. But more importantly, I think, are the farmers that are exposed to these toxins, these poisons, in more significant level. And they get it on their shoes, they get it on their clothing.
They bring it home to their families.
They bring it home.
Yes, I agree. And it's equally as important, if not more important, to point that out. Thank you for thanking me for pointing that out.
Okay, in other news, there are restaurants that are closing because they have no business.
This is very sad news.
And this is sad news. One of our favorites was Blossom on 9th Avenue in Chelsea in Manhattan. And after our favorites, Candle 79 and Candle West
close.
On the Upper East Side and the Upper West Side close, and they were our favorites, we would go to Blossom when we could.
Yeah, the last two restaurants I think we went to, the last two times we went to a restaurant.
For celebrations.
For celebrations, we went to Blossom down in Chelsea.
Yeah.
Now Blossom is still open on the Upper West Side on, is it Columbus?
Or Columbus.
Columbus, yeah.
Blossom on Columbus is
so still. These are vegan restaurants of the first order, to quote Star Wars again. These are vegan restaurants of the first order that we're discussing here. Blossom down in Chelsea was a charming little vegan restaurant that was really a lot of fun to go and celebrate special occasions, or just any time, actually. But it was a white tablecloth restaurant. Their food was fabulous.
Yep. We'll miss them.
We're going to have to go to the Blossom up on Columbus from now on, which I understand is open because they have outdoor seating.
Oh, right.
During the pandemic.
Yes.
So go spend some money at Blossom if you live in Manhattan. However, we don't live in Manhattan, so we won't be going there anytime soon.
Quite a while, unfortunately. Okay, so that's the bulk of the news I wanted to talk about today.
Great. Well, I've got a couple of other items on my list. One of them is there are a lot of people still finding that going vegan is the best thing for their health. Some of you might know of the very popular singer, entertainer, Lizzo, confirms she is vegan on TikTok while cooking a vegan omelet made from just egg.
Mm.
Congratulations, Lizzo, on going vegan. That is fabulous. So this program is also really beneficial for the kids out there who listen to artists such as Lizzo. And Lizzo's going vegan, and hopefully a lot of kids will get this and go vegan too. If you need help going vegan, we have hundreds of recipes at Responsible Eating and Living that are kid-friendly. One of my favorites is our mac and cheese. So if you think you have to give up cheese when you go vegan, think again.
Think again, again, and again. Gary serves it to all the kids that come over here to Responsible Eating and Living headquarters, including big kids.
Yes.
I'm going to take a little commercial break here. It's not really a commercial break, but I'm pouring myself a cup of chai rooibos tea.
Ribois.
That Gary brewed. And what we do is we buy a caffeine-free chai spice that has no tea in it, just the spices. It's organic. And then we buy a red rooibos. Is that redundant? We buy a rooibos tea that's plain. And then Gary mixes them together.
And I make my own plant milk. I make a cashew milk. Here's what I do. A cup of cashews in the bottom of the Vitamix. I add about a liter and a cup of water.
So that's about 5 cups?
About 5 cups of water. And 3 medjool dates.
Mm.
And a little vanilla. You could either make your own vanilla extract or you could buy it. We buy an organic vanilla extract. It's very expensive, but we don't use a whole lot of it. And I add about a teaspoon of vanilla, or a little more if you want it more vanilla-y. And I blend that and then I strain it. You don't have to soak the cashews overnight unless you're using a conventional blender as opposed to a Vitamix, which we've talked about on this program forever. I whir that up in the Vitamix. I strain it. and it makes an amazing plant milk. And again, the cashews are organic, raw cashews. You must use organic, raw cashews if you want it to be creamy and not salty. Don't use any roasted, salted cashews because that might turn out to be a different taste than what I'm talking about.
The raw nut, the raw seed is always the best choice.
A lot of folks don't know that, so it's good to always bring it up. If you're roasting a cashew, you know, 9 times out of 10, they're going to be using oil to roast it with.
If you like a flavor, a toasted flavor, buy the raw nut, buy the raw seed, and then when you're preparing a dish, turn the oven on briefly and toast the nut and seed for 5-10 minutes, keeping an eye on them because they can burn very quickly.
Right. I just did that recently for, I don't know, some couple is celebrating an anniversary of sorts, and I just toasted some cashews for one of the dinners I prepared for Karen.
Oh my goodness. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. So we wanted to go to our favorite restaurants, but they are closed or we're too far away. They are places we go in our neighborhood or places we go when we spend time in Northern California, which we were doing a lot, which we were supposed to be doing this summer because we get work out there. In addition to running this nonprofit, we are also artists and performers and directors and musical directors and things of that nature in the theater world. Well, as you all know, the theaters are closed. So the job that we had in Northern California didn't happen. But one of the restaurants we love, and we talk about it all the time on this program, is the Vegetarian House out there. And then one of the restaurants we love, which is a few blocks away here in our neighborhood in New York City, Queens, is called Green Zenfany. We were hankering for some Green Zenfany and or Vegetarian House food, and it was our anniversary. Karen and I reconnected 14 years ago on July 4th and haven't stopped talking since. And we even talk on the air now together, as you good people are witness to. So I made, as close as I could come to the fabulous food at Vegetarian House in Green Zenfany, I made a dish and I used some roasted cashews with that, some roasted raw cashews.
Okay, what was amazing about this dish, when we go to these restaurants that we like, they're still using oil, sugar, and salt.
Right.
And they're vegan.
Right.
But they're using oil, sugar, and salt. Now, Gary, you use your little eyedropper.
But it was only to put in the bottom of the cast iron pan and then wipe the cast iron pan.
Yeah, so there was very little oil.
Yeah, one eyedropper of olive oil
and
in the bottom of the pan.
One of the dishes you made had fresh zucchini, red pepper, the cashews you mentioned, and
some
you
tofu.
Put it in a coconut milk sauce.
A coconut milk sauce. So it's kind of, with fresh basil, kind of had a Thai inspired.
It was fresh basil from our little terrace garden.
Yes.
Fresh cilantro and basil.
So I used, right? I did that method that you were just discussing about toasting your nuts. What? Sorry about that. toasting your nuts in the oven, and you have to watch them very closely because they will burn. Your nuts will burn, so be careful. Okay, enough fun on nuts. But the other thing we wanted to talk about in our little garden, which I'm noticing again today, is that we have these tomato plants and the bottoms of the little tiny baby tomatoes, which are so cute, some of them are turning black. And why is that?
Wop, wop, wop. Tomato farmers, if you have some tips, let us know. What I've been reading is if they're not watered consistently, so they're in pots and they get dry very quickly. When they're dry, they may not be able to pull up the calcium they need. And so they get these brown, black bottoms. So we have to work on watering them consistently, but we don't want to overwater them. So it's
we don't
really
want to overwater. We don't know if we're underwatering. And so if there's any tomato, as Karen just said, if there's any tomato farmers out there or any gardeners out there who know what's going on with our little tomatoes who are so cute, but now they have some...
Not all of them, but some of them.
What are we doing wrong? Please let us know. Because someday we want to graduate and actually put plants in the ground.
Yes, but it's a different skill in pots versus in the ground.
Right.
Yeah. Can we just talk about the greens that you made for our anniversary dinner? Because they were so good. One of the things we love at Green Zenfany and some other vegan Asian restaurants is they make sautéed greens, either Chinese broccoli or watercress or spinach, and they're amazing.
Right.
And you did it.
Yes.
Without oil and salt.
Yeah, so what I did was, again, in the cast iron pan, and the only reason I season the cast iron pan with an eyedropper of oil is because they have a tendency to rust. So you want to heat up the pan, put a tiny little drop of oil in there, spread it around, and I wipe out the oil after it's heated into the cast iron pan. So the oil is virtually gone. It's just in the pan. But it's not gone. It's there. Okay, I get it. But anyway, so then I chopped some garlic and some ginger, and I minced it, and I put it in the bottom of the hot pan, and I spread it around. That's going to start to cook, and it's going to start to stick a little bit, but you're going to keep moving that around a little bit until it gets somewhat toasted. Then I've taken the spinach, and these were long-stemmed spinach. This was a kind that's perfect for doing this method that I'm talking about now. And I just laid the wet spinach. I washed the spinach very well, but I left some of the moisture on it. I laid it on top of this roasting, toasting, sauteing garlic and ginger. And then I covered it immediately with a lid so it all steamed. That removed the ginger and garlic on the bottom that was sticking. It just brought it right up. It deglazed it. And then grabbed it with some tongs, laid it flat on a nice little rectangular dish, and then scraped up all of the ginger and garlic and put that on top. We have a picture of it. It took about 60 seconds to cook the spinach. So don't overcook your spinach. It's just, once it starts to wilt there in that steam, 60 seconds to a minute and a half, pull it up. It was really quick, and it was delicious.
Delicious. It was genius, not stirring.
I think we have a picture of it that we can post.
Definitely we'll post the picture.
We'll post the picture of both of those dishes.
That was amazing,
but
amazing dish.
Happy anniversary, Karen.
Thank you, Gary. And yeah. Thank you. You also made... Now, we have a multi-grain blend that we like to make, and I don't know why I've never posted a recipe of this. I'm going to have to do that. But we usually mix brown rice, black rice, red rice, and millet. Sometimes we just do brown rice, red rice, and black rice together. A while back, we used to mix a little kamut or taranakum in it, which is a wheat product.
I think the blend is up on the website because it's the blend we use for our
burgers. But it's not a separate
grain post, right.
But we make it a lot. You made it seasoned with ginger and a little tamari?
Just a little tamari,
okay, yeah. So there was a little salt there, not too much. And it was amazing.
This dish for our anniversary, I did use a little tamari. And I may have even used a tablespoon or so of... I do this old school... Full disclosure here. I do this old school... I call it old school because it was before we stopped using sweeteners like maple syrup in our marinades and things. But I may have used a little bit of maple syrup and tamari in the marinade for the tofu before I baked it in the oven.
You made 84 pieces of tofu.
Yeah, well, you can get that little square block of tofu and cut that down to little tiny little cubes.
One little 16-ounce or 15-ounce block of firm tofu.
Yeah, here's another thing. A lot of people say they like tofu, but they don't want the oil that goes with, you know, sautéing tofu and getting it nice and crispy. So what I do, I cut the tofu block into little tiny blocks, and I lay it out on a sheet pan that's lined with parchment paper after marinating it, and then I bake it in a really hot oven, and it gets that crust on the tofu that you would normally get when you have to saute it in oil. I don't use the oil. I just cook it in a really hot oven, and it gets nice and crusty and chewy, and then I add it to the saute, and that all goes away, but it doesn't. It's there, and it feels like you've fried it. But you're not. You're not using any oil.
Okay, you said you made 84 little cubes by cutting it 7 by 12.
Okay, good.
Right? Yeah. They were great. Little adorable little bite-sized pieces, and there's a lot of them.
Right.
Yeah.
So you take the block of tofu and you cut it the long way first. What is that called?
Horizontally.
Horizontally. So you cut it down the middle, and then you cut it vertically, and then you cut it horizontally again, and you get the 84 pieces.
Yeah, it was
you
very
make it
good.
Like a graph. And you lay it out on a big sheet pan, one little cube at a time after they've been marinating and a little bit of your favorite marinade, and then you cook them in a really hot oven for about a half hour, and they start to get nice and toasty brown. You don't need to turn them over. although I do, and then cook them a little while longer on the other side.
But okay, the point is, cooking without oil, sugar, and salt is a good practice for every day. And then when you're having a celebratory meal, you can add a little of it back in. You don't have to even overdo it, just enough to make it special.
A little tamari and a little maple syrup. I don't think we're going to be discounted for that.
I don't think so.
No. That was just a special anniversary, which we call Bananiversary.
Speaking of bananas, keeping
with the theme.
Yeah, we have Bananiversary.
Because I went vegan, my first vegan meal after reconnecting with Karen about a month or so afterwards was a banana and a block of tofu from the supermarket.
We should have called it Banana Tofuversary.
Right. Well, we're giving tofu it's a good shout out today. Tofu is a great food, and so is, and I'm excited because we actually got some tempeh. We hadn't had tempeh for a while, but we found some. So
in our sheltering at home, getting food delivered. Thank you to all the people out there that are bringing food to the masses during this pandemic. We were able to get tempeh delivered.
Yeah, tempeh is great.
We might have to start making tempeh, figuring out how to make tempeh, too.
That would be fun. We're now making our own tofu. So that was my point and segue into that. We make our own tofu now, and it's great. Karen makes it. It's fabulous. We just had some the other day. It was good.
I want to add a little bit, backing up a bit. I want to add a little bit about the Merit Food Company in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want people to know what products they make. So while they're getting this big surge of investment funding from the Canadian government, they make pea protein, they make canola protein, and they make something called Merit Pro, a unique line of protein ingredients. And I'm just curious about this. Now, their canola protein is non-GMO. I know a lot of people go nuts when they hear about canola. We usually recommend using organic canola oil if you need an oil for high heat purposes. Organic is not the same as conventional canola, which can be made in a dangerous fashion and is GMO and has a lot of problems related to it. Organic canola is not the same. And so they're advertising that their canola is not a GMO product, which is important. I'm not promoting this company and what they make because I don't support these proteins, these isolated proteins that are made from whole food. Isolated pea protein is getting a lot of use these days because people don't like isolated soy protein. We don't know that much about isolated pea protein yet, but I would rather eat a pea than
pea
protein.
Me too. And you know, you can make your own pea protein powder by just putting some split peas in the Vitamix and experimenting that way. That's a lot of fun.
Oh!
Yeah.
We have to talk about lentil crepes.
Yeah, lentil crepes. So, you can make pea crepes, too.
I bet. We haven't tried it. But after speaking with Chef Bravo,
Ramses Bravo,
he said, I said, we were going to make those lentil crepes, and we didn't even have the right kind of lentils. He recommended the red or yellow split lentils, and we had little French green lentils.
Hey, we made them, and they were great.
Oh, my God.
You made them, and I finished them.
We just soaked them for an hour, blended them with water, like one cup of lentils, and then blended them with two cups of water. I think that's the ratio. And then started making crepes. I'm going to try the red and yellow ones to see if they're a little easier because in the beginning, they were a little fragile.
Right.
We had to kind of get to know the batter, but the flavor was amazing.
It was great. You handed the spatula off to me and I finished them up because you had already done the batter.
Yeah, it had a very egg-like flavor. Not that I'm promoting eggs, but
better than
a richness. Without the sulfur flavor.
Yeah, without the sulfur. Whenever you say egg-like flavor, you have to clarify that it's without the sulfur. But, I mean, a lot of folks want to use that kind of a batter when they're making their frittatas and things, and I think this would work really well.
Yeah.
I know garbanzo bean flour and water works extremely well as an egg replacement for things like frittatas and quiches and things like that.
And we make the soca a lot, which is a garbanzo bean flour crepe, which is very easy to make.
But and this was not unlike soca.
But it has a better flavor.
Right. The lentil crepe that you made was not unlike soca as far as its texture and consistency, but the flavor was much better. And I'm excited to try the pea, the split peas, see if that does anything. It's
We're
a disaster.
Try them all.
Sometimes it's a disaster in the kitchen. It's okay. You just keep pressing on, keep moving forward. Karen got this crazy idea. She was making the pancake house pancakes. And the griddle was there, and she had some leftover whipped up aquafaba, which was, it looks like meringue. It is meringue. It's an aquafaba meringue. It's a vegan meringue. And she thought, I wonder what'll happen if I pour this meringue on this hot griddle. She had a moment of insanity. I went with it. I watched her do it, and it was a disaster.
And you cleaned up after me.
But, sometimes you have to do things like that, folks. It's the kitchen. It's a laboratory. Your kitchen is your lab. You've got to just, experiment, right?
Right. Yeah.
If you want to wear a white coat, if it makes you feel better.
Wear a white coat.
Wear a white coat. There are chef jackets out there that look like lab coats.
Well, I know that there are some people out there who still eat eggs and they want their omelets, but they'll make an egg white omelet to avoid the fatty cholesterol.
I knew why you were doing it. You wanted to see if it would react or behave as an egg white omelet would behave.
Yeah, so it probably needs some more things.
Well, I don't know if you need to whip it into a meringue first. See, that was the problem.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you could do it without the meringue. Add a little pea protein.
I'm sure there are some man-made products out there.
No, add a little ground up pea flour in your aquafaba and see what happens.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it'll stabilize it.
I know what I'm thinking.
You're thinking souffle.
Well, yeah, we've made those Japanese pancakes.
The scallion pancakes?
No, the kind that are very light
and fluffy. Right.
The Japanese silk pancakes, I think they call them.
The silk pancakes, right.
And the secret is to use a mold.
Right.
Which holds, and the silk pancakes, the traditional ones, they use a mold. So there's a round mold, a cylinder that's greased and put on the fry pan, and you pour the batter in there, and then the pancake firms up while it's sitting there, but it keeps its height.
Those are cute little molds.
And we did that once.
Yeah. We bought those molds in Manhattan at a restaurant supply store.
And I did it with that. I used a garbanzo bean flour and the whipped aquafaba.
Yeah. Awesome stuff.
I got to do that. I never posted that either. That's a recipe that's still in the works.
Yeah. Well, there's still 3 Pancake House pancakes in the refrigerator that I might have to go eat after this show.
Yeah.
As a dessert.
You're not going to be alone.
Great.
Now, I just wanted to mention also, I finally posted the Apple Project post. It took a while to write
it up. It was a cookbook. Are you kidding me? That Apple Project was a little pamphlet cookbook. It should be published and sold as the Apple Project Pamphlet Cookbook.
Well, there are 8 versions of apple cake that I made. One of them is the original recipe that our listener Donna gave us, and I veganized it. That was the one that we're in a sugar coma for the rest of the day.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people will like that one if you like sugar.
Half of it is still in the freezer.
And then there were versions using cassava flour and versions using our gluten-free flour mix.
This pamphlet, this Apple Project pamphlet that you did, is a thesis statement. It's it's your doctorate on apple cakes. It's really...
I don't know that I've perfected it yet, but...
It's still a work in progress.
It's still a work in progress. When you're trying to keep within certain boundaries, it makes it more of a challenge.
Yes.
So that's the apple cake story.
And that'll be posted too. Lots of things will be posted. We keep busy here at Responsible Eating and Living headquarters. Yes.
Another one that I will probably post, I'm getting into making a lot of round foods.
Round foods,
Has anyone figured that out yet? We've been talking about tortillas.
Apple
cake was a round cake, and the crepes that I make generally are round. The pancakes are round.
The soca.
when we were making tortillas, I ended up making a potato tortilla. So we had made the sweet potato cassava flour tortilla, and we had some potato flour in the refrigerator from making potato pancakes. And I made a potato tortilla.
They were fabulous.
They were fabulous. I have to post that.
Yeah, they were really, really good. And I could, you know what I kept thinking about when I was eating these potato-based tortillas was some cheese sauce, some of the vegan cheese sauce that we make drizzled all over them. It would be really a great comfort food snack.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun discovering what you can make tortillas out of.
Yeah.
We're still making the masa harina corn tortillas and the sweet potato cassava tortillas. It's fun to have all different kinds of colors.
Yes, and round things.
And round.
To be, I like round. To hang around with round things. You hang around with rounds.
Anything else I've made round?
You make everything round.
But we're not round.
No, we're not round. It's fun to make round food. It's fun to make food in different shapes.
I think it's
fun to pour food onto griddles.
It is, indeed.
Yeah. The tortillas are really the latest and greatest thing.
We're having fun with them.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun with them. Yeah, sweet potatoes are fun, too, when you make your, as you said, your cassava flour sweet potato tortilla. That's really fun to play with.
Well, the next time we get purple sweet potatoes, I'm making a purple tortilla.
I miss our purple sweet potatoes.
Yeah, we haven't had them in a long time.
I forget the name.
I think we could order them online somewhere. I'm going to look for that.
What is her name? It's her name.
The Stokes.
Stokes.
Sweet,
right.
Purple sweet potatoes.
She is the queen of the purple sweet potato. Not to be confused with the purple not sweet potato.
The purple potato and the purple sweet potato are not the same.
No.
And when we used to buy purple sweet potatoes at Whole Foods, which were organic, they did not have organic purple potatoes.
Right.
And a while back, someone recommended Trader Joe's having organic purple potatoes. And they may have had them briefly, but I didn't see them. I saw conventional purple sweet potatoes.
Yes.
Anyway, they're different. I know that they don't consistently supply all their stores.
Well, we're just not going to go hungry here. We hope you aren't going hungry either. If you need any recipes, let us know. If you want Karen to work on another thesis for something.
Maybe I can do that.
Karen will go the extra mile for you, our beloved listeners. So thank you for being there.
Thank you. I'm getting hungry, Gary. So I think we need to wrap this up talking about wraps and everything else and eat our own wraps.
Yeah, let's wrap it up and have a wrap.
It's a wrap.
It was fun rapping with you.
Always, always, always.
Yeah.
And I learned things. So thanks, Gary, for joining me today on It's All About Food.
Thanks, PRN. Thanks, Gary Knoll. Thanks to the guys down at PRN headquarters for being there. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. This is Karen Hartglass and Gary D. Matei from Responsible Eating and Living Pandemic Headquarters.
Have a delicious week. Thank you.